that's not as,
that's huge.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's also multi-generational. It's like newborns to 90-year-olds. It's like everyone in between. And real music fans. I love it. But it was just one of those moments where you could see people, they were just wondering, who is this? And where are we? And what's going on? And where do they come from? Who are these guys on stage? So it was such a beautiful way to be introduced to this band. I've listened to Mockingbird 10,000 times this year. Live, I was just blown away by this band I had not known 10 seconds earlier. So
I listened to their album that came out last year, mm-hmm. When you recommended me their name. And I love how many different genres it covers, but it still kind of has one cohesive sound. Like it's an indie band. Mm-hmm. There's a bit of folk. There's a bit of country. There's some real power pop and harmonies and stuff going on in there. I love how much stuff they've got going on.
Yeah, and I mean, their little set, the tweener set, worked because I saw them at their bigger stage the next day. But yeah, they were great. They're a really tight live band, too. Yeah, they're really great. So I hope that they'll do a bigger Canadian tour.
Yeah, come back to Toronto, guys.
Yeah. To bring up another artist who's phenomenal is Begonia.
Yes.
Did you like Fantasy Life, that record?
I have not seen it live.
Oh, yeah.
But I know that, like, I've been a fan since the Married by Elvis days.
Nice.
And it's good pop music to just put on and then, like, just get lost in it, you know?
She has one of the most beautiful voices in this country.
Also, her Juno set earlier this year.
Oh, I don't know if I saw it.
She was one of the performers at the Junos. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she came up with like this beautiful set and she comes all dressed up and she just gives a really, really good performance. Mm-hmm. It's just something to see.
Oh, yeah. She could sing me the entire, you know, terms and conditions of Meta's AI policy agreement. And I'd be like, oh, my God, this is the greatest. Yeah, truly. Like, and an unbelievable person as well. And then also Shad released Start Anew, which is such a great record. And I just love his style of rhyming. I remember it was at Bars and Barbecues. He posted a little clip, I think during the pandemic. He was just freestyling. It's like on Instagram years ago. And I was just happy to get a new record from him. I find him so smart. And he always makes me dance, but always makes me think at the same time. So that was great. And Happiness was another track that was definitely in high rotation.
But I also want to know what your kind of shows of 2025 were, because you and I went to a lot of shows.
Oh, yeah. Massey Hall shows. I think it's the greatest venue in the country. That and the Commodore Ballroom in Vancouver. Mm-hmm. And I think it's the Palace Grand in Dawson City, Yukon, are probably my top three. But anyways, that's a whole other show. But I will say, seeing Jack White. One of three shows. And it was the first of his Massey shows. There was something about the way he operates. Of course, he's a genius, but he truly walked on stage and just started the opening riff of Rockin' in the Free World. And you watched in real time his band, not knowing what was coming, start to play. Like, apparently his sets are not laid
out.
There's no set list. You just kind of roll wherever he takes you. And it was wild to see. I was really close to the front, and I just see that in real time was amazing. And as well, too, he was so excited, like you were saying earlier, when a band is into it on stage. You could tell he was having fun, but you could tell he also had some sort of, you know, reverence and respect for the place where Neil Young had his live album and the history of Massey Hall. And he actually said something like, took me 25 years, Ma, but I'm playing Massey Hall. And he made you feel like you were part of his birthday party. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. He's like, you're welcome to be part of this with me. It's cool for me. And he doesn't forget the White Stripes songbook either. He still celebrates it, which I think is awesome. And I also was totally checking out the drummer to see, because that Meg White drum pattern, it's so uniquely hers to see people who perhaps are classically trained or from different, some of the biggest drummers in, especially now with the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction, were saying like, no, she's got her own special cred that's hard to mimic.
Yeah, so that's her style.
Yeah.
I loved his speech at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame as well. Yeah. Apparently approved and like half edited by Meg White as well. So she was in there too, in spirit. But I just love his speech over there also. It was just so moving.
It was so good. Beth Gibbons at Massey Hall. Her voice is just so tremendously haunting and beautiful. And, you know, she doesn't like the spotlight, but no matter how backlit she was or how much she hid from it, she was just absolutely radiant. It was just one of those shows that was for the books.
I wish I was at that show.
That was beautiful. Seeing Oasis, which, again, that show was... Did you go to the Oasis? Yeah.
I was at both shows.
Both shows. Okay, so I was at the first one with the rain, which was perfect.
It was special. Like, I feel like it opened them up as well.
Yeah.
You know, I think they maybe had, like, North America nerves coming in and playing here for first time in a really long time. Well, first time since 2008 together. And I know they've done solo stops, but nothing as big as this. So they come on. I think they were a bit jittery. They didn't want, like, they didn't want to jinx it. They didn't want to mess it up. And it felt a bit mechanical until the rain started coming down.
Yeah.
And then it kind of just opened them up. Like, Liam started cracking some jokes. Noel came in with some, you know, witty kind of remarks here and there.
Live for the banter. I was waiting for it. Like, that was the highlight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then after that, they were set. That's when we got Oasis.
Yeah. I thought it was great. Also, Cage the Elephant were a great opener. I felt like they didn't play to enough people, but it was really, they were solid. They always are. You know, I saw Pulp.
Such a good show.
That was really lovely.
Album.
Such a great record. And also, you know who I saw? I saw Royal Otis as well.
I want to hear about that show.
I feel like they definitely kicked it up a notch since Pratt's in Pain. Pratt's in Pain, I loved that record more than Hickey, but I do like Hickey a lot. I think it's a solid record. But they just seemed as though everything was a bit more elevated this time around. And they definitely jumped into the crowd to perform kind of at the back of history. The fans were crazy. And yeah, it was a great set.
Yeah.
Yeah, I also feel like you're seeing Royal open up more. He seemed pretty... more reserved, I think, that first tour, at least in at the shows I saw.
And I remember those early interviews where they would just be like, you know, hair all over their face, monosyllabic answers, really kind of like classic 90s kind of awkward interviewers. I was glad to hear they're coming out of their wallflower phase.
Yeah. We did a really small, intimate Q&A with Sarah McLachlan, and she did a set of probably 6 or 7 songs, truly, in front of 500 people. It was for her new record. And she was, like, just a firecracker in the interview, just really, like, a real one, just a wonderful interview. And then her voice hasn't changed in 30 years. She just was pitch perfect, cracking jokes, just, like, very effortless delivering the tracks, and it was really cool.
Feels like one of those shows where you wouldn't know where all your time went.
Yeah, yeah. She also, I did go to that Massey Hall show too, where she performed Fumbling Towards Ecstasy, and it was cool to see some of those songs, like deep album cuts live. I do love an anniversary tour. Let it be all it is, small and still and better left
alone. Some things are better broken. And what are you looking forward to next year? Because I feel like everything that happens in the back half of this year just sets up 2026.
Totally. I'm looking forward to hearing, we were talking about this earlier, Ray's new record, whenever we get it. Because Where Is My Husband came out like late in 2025.
I think she debuted it at Glastonbury.
She debuted it, yeah.
We got nothing after that.
It's an interesting way to roll out press for an album with truly one of the greatest, most catchy songs of the year. So I'm curious to know what she delivers in 2026, especially if this is a taste of what's to come. It's just so good. And I'm also, there's a lot of kind of rumors about the return of rock music in 2026. Again, rock music doesn't ever go away, but it's more so what... the popularity looks like when the algorithm delivers, if you will. But I think the political climate, when things get really intense, sometimes historically there has been a resurgence of heavier music in the mainstream.
Yeah, heavier thematically.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering, we're also seeing recession pop coming back. So that's the other, right? That's the balance of it.
Yeah. And I just found out, or I guess we all found out, Bjork's going to release a new record.
Yes, and also Robin's coming back next year.
Okay, so we have to talk Robin. I actually, I'm running out of time. I think Robin's tune, Dopamine, clearly I'm excited. I'm saying it in like every grammatical way possible. It's such a bop. Apparently she held on to it for 10 years, wow, trying to figure out how to make it work. And if that's a taste of what's to come as well, that's, she just has her own kind of sound when it comes to her production.
Yeah.
And it had been so long. It's almost like a comforting hug from your favorite old Casio keyboard or whatever. Like, you just, the production she has with her producer, they have such a symbiotic relationship that somehow there is that thorough way that just, I don't know. I'm just so excited for Robin.
Mm-hmm. It's a return to form, really. Like, yeah, it's classic Robin.
Yeah, that's exactly what I should be saying, but with less words. There you go. You're better at the word economy than I am. But yes, I'm looking forward to Robin. What about you? I think you're going to...
But I feel like now we're seeing American indie kind of coming out of just being underground, because mm-hmm, I feel like it's harder to break out over there because it's such a huge kind of ground to cover, mm, that everyone kind of remains in their little pockets. But now you can go around and people have heard the name Wednesday. People have heard the name Geese. Mm-hmm. There's a couple of others coming out of that, you know, there's finally like an American indie kind of zeitgeist again.
Interesting. Okay, well, I look forward to having more chats with you in 2026.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
I'm always like scouring what you're posting on social. You're always like ear to the ground. so many little shows, and I'm like, where's Rue now? What's going on? What's on the playlist?
Yeah. Lana, thanks so much for joining me on the show.
Thanks so much, Rue. And happy early 2026.
Yes, we're looking forward to it.
Yes.
Astrid, do we want to start with talking about like how we met, just to introduce you to our listeners?
Yeah, so we met at a courting show. I was really excited there actually to see Slow Fiction, but unfortunately they weren't able to make it.
They weren't able to cross the border.
Yeah, tragic. But the courting show was amazing nonetheless. It was super chaotic. The band was super great. And I got to meet Rue, which was one of the highlights of my year.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Likely place for me to be.
Yeah. For me, there was a lot of follow-up albums, a lot of seconds, which is always interesting because you have this like expectation from the first album, and it's does the second album
does it hold up?
Does it hold up? Are they going in a new direction, or is it something entirely new? And how has the band changed?
Do you feel like this year, the saying that you've got your whole life to write your first album and like 6 months to write your second one maybe came true for a lot of bands?
Yeah, maybe. Okay, well, I'll start with probably my favorite album of the year, which was Sports Team Boys These Days. For me, it started with hearing the single Bang Bang, which is such maximalist. It's so full. It's like an Odyssey story. It like reminds me of like country ballads type songs.
It's a pure coincidence that the band themselves, they were like in California or something on tour. And they were robbed of all their gear at gunpoint at like some town that's notorious for exactly that kind of thing, at like a petrol station when they were on tour. And then like a week later, they dropped this song, which is very relevant to the kind of, like you were saying, kind of a Western idea, but a more modern one where it's like mixing in modern day American politics into it and stuff too. So I don't know what came first, but it just proved their point, I feel like, and made the song and album 10 times more relevant.
Yeah, I mean, horrible that that happened.
But I also remember when the first single came out, I think it was Love in a Subaru.
Yeah.
And it's just such a...
a different song.
It's an indie pop dream song. Like,
well,
that was
it,
one of the...
Indie pop? Because it's so jazzy and it's so cheesy.
I'm in love.
Subaru. Yeah, Subaru.
Yeah.
Yeah. I got really worried when I heard that. I was like, oh no, I think I'm done with this. This is one of the things I think about is really cool about the album, actually having heard it as a whole album, is that it starts on this really, like, it's got all this brass in it. It's got this kind of like cheesy vocals. And then increasingly over the course of the album, it becomes to me more and more like of the scene they're in. It becomes... the vocals become less melodic. There's more drums. There's more guitar. There's less piano. There's less brass. And it becomes more of this like rock album or like post-punky kind of album, mm-hmm. Which I think is really interesting.
So they did the classic thing of drop the most different single at the beginning to kind of throw people off or bring in a new audience and then hit them with what is just classic sports team.
Yeah, classic sports team.
It took me a little while to get personally, because it was like they're not one genre, and in my mind, like, I got into them from Cigarette Packet. It's a bit bedroom pop, lo-fi indie kind of vibe, kind of down-tuned stuff. It fit into that vibe for me, but then I think this album is where they kind of came out of their shell. Like, I've heard a lot of people say that they feel the first album is still more distinct, but it's been 5 years since the first album came out. Like, we have to look at where they are right now. And if you ask me to compare the second album, which came out in 2022, or this one, I think this one's just got the personality, the character, the voice. And even though they're going through so many different genres to get to it, there's the core of Sorry at the heart of it all, which I think is a really interesting thing.
Which I think is like a really genuine lyricism, and like this unabashedness. I mean, I remember when the first album came out, 95, I was listening to it on repeat. But I remember reading an article about it that was complaining about them, like, they have Ode to Boy, where they rhyme maybe with baby throughout the whole thing, which, you know, but they're just so unabashed about it, and like they just like declare what they want to do, and they do it really well.
There are quite a few references on this album. Like, they used a few samples here and there. They had a Guided by Voices track. So they have the Hot Freaks yell on Jet Plane.
Love will rip us apart on Love Posture.
Yes. I think Echoes as well. There's a little bit of like when they're singing Echo, Echo, I Love You. And you've got that, again, very Cure-like indie rock thing. It reminds me of the Fontaines DC song, I Love You. Mm-hmm. And then on Waxwing, they've got the Hey Mickey, You're So Fine reference as well.
Yeah.
So they're going through, like, I feel like the album title is very fitting. They're going through this thing of like trying on different bands, different styles. But at the heart of it, there's a band that is clearly, you know, coming through. Like I said, a distinct voice that's cutting through.
Yeah, and I think part of what I like about maybe the first album and this album more than their second album is they both have this like kind of desperation or frenzy kind of feeling on it. It's like it feels like this desperate desire to be heard or to be seen, to be touched, and it's just like rimming with that energy. And I think I like the second album a lot too, but these two really did it for me.
Yeah, these two kind of stand out, and then seeing them live, I think in my mind kind of solidified it, that they're able to do things with a certain subtleness, but it's like a very loud subtleness. Like, they'll come out with a megaphone and all of that and turn off all the lights so you can't actually see the megaphone.
I love that so much.
Just that kind of thing. Like, there were a couple moments in the show where they got the lights completely killed. I wonder now, putting it in the context of all this, if they like specifically had the vocals turned down so that you can't really hear them over the mix, if it's meant to be this subtle thing, if it's meant to be kind of
I thought at that show everything needed to be louder, but yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like, I don't know what it is with some of this mm-hmm. stuff. Like, it's meant to be a bit in your head, but it's a loud and like, you know, some of the songs on the album, on the record, sound like they're clipping, like it's too loud. But it's also all in your head. So I feel like that juxtaposition
It feels like a fever dream. It feels unreal. Yeah.
There's also another thing on their album that I think they do really well, is that they'll be singing these, like, these love songs, but they come out in this whispered way, and there are some, like, real kind of cacophonous sounds here and there, like some very discordant melodies, and it's like, this feels like love in a horror film, and that's yeah. a compliment.
I mean, when we were there, I was telling you that I think the new Charlie XCX song for the Wuthering Heights movie reminds me so much of Sorry, because of that like discordant nature, that kind of like gothic type of thing, but like mm-hmm. and the fuzziness of it too.
Yeah,
all those things come together.
Yeah. Like, it was one of my albums of the year, and, like, I think that... I don't know if the show was my show of the year, just because I feel like even if you've got that aesthetic, people do actually deserve to hear your songs when you're playing them live, so I do think the vocals maybe should have been turned up a little bit louder and all of that, but the band themselves were great up on stage. Like, that could have just been a sound. I think it was a great album, though.
Yeah, I love that album. It's probably my... Yeah, probably that and Sports Team are my two albums of the year for me. Can I talk about the Divorce album?
Yes.
I love Divorce.
So this was Drive to Golden Hammer.
Yeah, Drive to Golden Hammer, which I think is actually their debut full-length album.
It is their debut album.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of stuff going on in there. Like, I remember, like, to me it was indie rock, road trip album, isn't it?
It's a road trip, and they say it in the mm-hmm. title, and it really does sound like a journey and sound like a road trip.
Mm-hmm.
I love a duet. One of my favorite things are duets, and this is just like full of them. Really love Old Broken String, probably my favorite song off the album.
And kind of what I found was it's an album that's quite in your head. Like, there's a lot of, you were saying, reflecting on how people perceive you. There's a lot of kind of self-awareness in it. I feel like there's a lot of reflection going on.
I also think that a lot of the songs on this album are quite uplifting, though. For example, at the end of Hangman, which I think is just like the summation of this idea for me, they say, like, I care about you already. I want to lift you up. I want to lift you up. And this album to me is just a very uplifting album, even though it's so introspective and plodding. And I think that's a really fun, different tone from a lot of the other stuff I've been listening to.
Yeah.
Care about you already. I want to lift you up. I want to lift you up. I care about you. Lift you up, I will lift you up.
There's a lot less cynicism this year, and a lot of it is just kind of people finding their little happy moments in their personal little bubbles in the midst of everything else.
Yeah, bring the Idols ethos into some more underground music.
Oh, truly, love is the thing, right?
Yeah,
there we go. So it's been happening for a few years, and this year kind of continues on it. And I feel like we want to talk about the Shame album, don't we?
Yeah, I mean, I think Cutthroat, the lead single off of Shame's new album, is probably the song of the year for me.
Oh, for sure.
It's so much fun. It's just every time I listen to it, my mood is
just
improved.
Brightens.
Yeah.
It's got such swagger to it.
Yeah.
Like, and I just like to get to the image side of things for a quick second. The look of this album and the look of like that music video in particular was reviving an old kind of Charlie Steen classic look, which was maybe a bit underused because it was this custom shiny gold underpants that he'd worn at Glastonbury when they played it in 2023. And it was like, they weren't even on one of the televised stages. So you can't actually find proper footage of this performance. But like just from a few pictures, a few clips that people saw on social media and all of that, it's like it was one of the most requested pieces of merch on their website. I don't think they ended up doing it because like, do you really want to be selling underpants as part of your merch? But they, it's clearly been strong enough a look that has stuck around and it's come back two whole years later on Cutthroat as like the look of this album. Like when we see the music video, it's kind of like this sort of BMX like thing, and Charlie's in it for a lot of it, and he's there in his gold underpants through the whole thing. And like we've been talking about positives coming through on albums, like he was saying that, you know, it's not an easy look for him because he kind of struggled with body image issues for quite a while, and so like, you know, getting to that stage and all of that, but I'm glad he's having fun on it. And you can hear the swagger in that song as well. And it's just one of those songs that shows you sometimes you just really need to swear in a song to get the full effect on it, because now I cannot imagine this chorus with in any other way.
No, it needs it. It's like part of the release of it.
Yeah.
It's brilliant. It's so well done. And I mean, to me, this song and Boys These Days actually go together in this like combating of toxic masculinity.
Yeah.
And I love it. I think it's great. Spent too much time on my knees. When I hear nothing's good for me, but I still can't make the choice to leave. Well, that's why I dream all night of a quiet life you can't provide. Maybe the last album that I really enjoyed this year that we'll talk about in depth is Hotel Lux's release, The Bitter Cup. It came out quite recently, but it's got this really fun kind of like pub feel to it. I was actually surprised to learn that they weren't from Ireland. I thought they were Irish. But it's the tracks have fiddles on them. They've got accordions, and it just like, and the vocals are quite like raucous and unpolished, and it just feels like singing with friends. And I really enjoy it. I found this band actually a couple years ago. One of their first songs that they released is actually a Christmas song. Yeah, The Cavalry, which is an interesting direction. This is their debut album. Okay. They've had a couple singles before, but this is their debut album. So Another One Gone is one of my favorite tracks off the album. It's a waltz. It's super low. This is something like I like about a lot of their songs. I really like low vocals, and they've got that going. Rhythmic, but without drums. And I really like that.
They're from Portsmouth. But like, you know, you get that kind of coastal town band vibe from them, where it's like, this is kind of all you have to do. It's a communal thing in some ways.
Yeah.
That you were saying, like, they feel like a band that kind of hangs out in the pub and stuff. You do kind of get that feeling from their songs as well. Like, it's very fitting for who they are.
And they also have a lot of their songs do feel pulling from like the 80s post-punk scene. Yeah, like I hear like a lot of the fall on their songs. Can I give a couple really quick shout outs?
Yes,
to some bands and some songs that I really liked. An American band that had an album come out that I think is fantastic, System by Prune. I really like this album. It's got a lot of strings on it also. There's a band called Ideal Living, put out an EP this year, and it's really good. It's pretty like goth. It's got like super deep lead male voice on it. Forsaken in glass.
Okay, we are sitting in the lovely TPL reference rooms, and we're doing a 2025 best of wrap up, and I'm joined by Owen and Fig.
Hello.
Who've been on the show before. Both of you have been on the show before, technically.
Oh, technically.
Technically.
Yeah, technically.
Technically.
In a crew capacity, if nothing else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You guys were with me at the PIS show, amongst other things that we've done.
I need to address something up front.
Okay.
I'm just going to get it out of the way. Geese. Yes, that was my favorite album of the year. I intend to take the rest of this time to talk about every other album. Okay?
Oh my God.
To be fair, I was kind of counting on you as like our resident Geese expert.
Geese head. Yeah.
Because, I mean, they've been kind of one of the bands of the year. I know I wanted to start with talking about kind of general trends of 2025, and
yeah.
It wouldn't be fair to say that it, like, you couldn't not talk about Geese if you're talking about what 2025 in music has been. Walk me through when you think the Geese phenomenon really kind of hit, that when you knew that like Geese were going to be the band of this year.
It was, I can tell you exactly what it was. And it was when they did Taxes on Jimmy Kimmel.
Yes.
Because without, you know, getting into geopolitics too much, there was a lot of attention on Jimmy Kimmel because
yes.
His show got canceled and then it got very quickly uncanceled. And they were the first artists on the show after that happened. And heavy metal, obviously, has been kind of quietly creeping its way up since mm-hmm. December.
So that's Cameron Winter's solo album.
It's the solo album.
That he released just after the year end lists are already compiled,
yes.
But still within 2024.
Yeah.
It sort of set the foundations for what Geese were going to be, because I'm not sure what exactly from that album blew up. It just seems like an album that as a whole got really big.
Yeah.
And then on the back of all the attention that that album got, people... I mean, this doesn't always happen. There's a lot of cases where, like, the frontman is way more successful than the band ever gets because,
yeah.
You know, their solo album took off, or they're just a more compelling personality or whatever.
Interesting,
but
for it to be happening side by side, though,
yeah.
Isn't it?
But I feel like in this case, similar to someone like MJ Lenderman, similar to a few other people who've been stepping out of their bands and doing solo albums and stuff, the success has actually been coming back to their band as well.
Yeah, exactly. Nobody would care. You can stay with me. You can stay. Excellently into talking about the other band I really want to talk about.
Go for it.
Which is Wednesday.
Yes.
I think Lenderman is slowly pulling his way out of Wednesday.
Yeah, I think he's planning an exit.
Yeah.
He's not touring
with them anymore. He and Carly Hertzman aren't together anymore. And obviously that can work for some people. You know, obviously Fleetwood Mac, but also like Big Thief.
I literally had a conversation with someone today about the fact that like when members of bands break up, it's usually it's the end. But then you have bands like the Marías,
yeah.
Or like Fleetwood Mac, and it's insane.
Big Thief. Even I found out Water From Your Eyes used to be a couple, and they're a duo.
Yeah.
And even the White Stripes, like they were divorced by the time I think their first or second album came out, and they did another like 10, 11 years.
Sometimes the music can power through the most immense heartbreak, and isn't that something special?
Gets along just fine, 'cause the champagne tastes like elderberry wine, and the pink boiled eggs stay float in the brine, 'cause even the best champagne still tastes like elderberry wine.
Water From Your Eyes, who put out their third or fourth album. It's a Beautiful Place this year. And just what an amazing, amazing kind of like dynamic the two have. Like I am really, really itching for us to see them next year. Obviously, a bit of an uphill battle since, you know, their star has risen enough that they're opening for Hayley Williams.
Is that
Massey Hall? It is Massey Hall. Two nights at Massey Hall, which good luck to us trying to get that gig, but, you know. just really great. You know, Rachel Brown has this really, really great deadpan delivery.
Yeah.
Mixed
they were,
with
they
these.
They were a bit of the sort of second wave indie rock archetype.
Oh, yeah.
And that began happening, like, in the 2010s.
Yeah. And mixed with, like, these sort of quasi-electronic beats that Nate from This Is Lorelei puts down for them. It's a really potent combination. You mentioned the 2010s, but I think a lot of, like, I could see them sort of slotting into the, and I kind of wince as I say this, I could see them slotting into the 2000s indie sleaze thing. You know, there's a very post 9/11 sensibility to what they have going on.
Is it post 9/11 or is it post recession?
I think it's as Fig just kind of said, it's both. It's probably a little bit of both. Like you mentioned the 2010s and then I mentioned the 2010s.
Who also released an album this year, and it's Bar Italia. Me and Owen saw them, and they
for
were
free.
For
Thank
free.
You, Sonic Boom.
Thank you, Sonic Boom. No, they were amazing. They came out with their album, Some Like It Hot, I'm pretty sure it was called.
Mm-hmm.
And it's
named after the Marilyn Monroe movie.
Yeah, they were amazing. And they also kind of had this like deadpan, very stoic thing going on for them. I feel like, especially the lead singer, she's incredible. And I met her after the show.
You did?
I did.
I didn't know this.
Yeah, I went up to her and I was like, great set, by the way. And she looked at me, she went, thank you. Thank you.
Very British.
And then that was that.
Just, I had a lot of fun with that album.
Yeah, their stage presence throughout the entire performance of that album was genuinely very electric and very, honestly,
like Stevie Nicks style twirling.
Yeah, I think I have to compare it to like being on shrooms or something. it was just so like
a little bit frenetic.
Yeah, it was very like majestical.
Honestly, the thing I find the most unique about Bar Italia and the thing that kind of enthralled me the most when I was listening to the album and then again when we were watching them is that they kind of all share lead vocalist duties. I mean, there's a very clear focus on their female vocalist, but they kind of all fill that role. And Rooster in particular is a really great song for that. They're all going basically verse for verse. It's like you almost feel like you're listening to like rappers collaborating or something, but it's like very clearly like a 2010s indie rock kind of track. It's a really unique combination of vibes.
So what I'm getting from this is that while they're a band that I think musically probably sound like quite a few other indie rock bands out there to an extent, it's the songwriting partnership once again, the songwriting duo.
Trio in this case, I believe.
Trio. But the sort of back and forth of voices that's again done it for you guys.
No resist, is my life.
Because a lot of people that really do like Turnstile don't like the new album. I don't think it was a selling out album. I think they got big and they realized that they can really experiment with their music, and that's what they did. You have songs like Birds on there that I think is genuinely one of the best songs I heard off the album, and in general this year, which a lot of people think that's controversial because they didn't really like it.
They had a great year for touring too.
They had a fantastic touring year
with some amazing people like Amel and the Sniffers and Jane Remover. Shout out Aiden.
Shout out.
And just a bunch of really amazing acts. And every video I saw of their live shows was like the most energy I've ever seen, or it was someone like crapping on the floor or someone getting like maced by a cop. And honestly, like, what's more, like, that sounds like the opposite of selling out to me. That sounds like rock and roll.
I think they still have what, you know, made them big in the first place. Like, it's their personalities. It's the way that they conduct themselves when they perform. And I don't think that's changed. I think people just like to be really upset all the time. And they're like, oh, it's not as heavy as it was. They're selling out to the man, the labels. Man.
But all they did was get a little bit more brass on the album.
Yeah.
And it's not like a you know, album production thing. Those brass sections toured like
with
Yeah, I don't think it's a bad thing at all. And I think it was a fantastic album that needs to get more credit than what it's gotten.
And I think if these people were honest with themselves, they would acknowledge that there is a clear history of punk and ska and all these things running alongside having a brass section.
100%.
It's not selling out. It's like tapping in.
100%.
Mm-hmm. And also, like, Birds was the song that had that huge moment at Tiny Desk.
The first
Tiny Desk flip.
Yeah.
The first Tiny Desk crowd surf?
Crowd surf, yeah. It was the first.
It was not the last.
It was amazing. And this is what I'm saying. It's like people are saying that they're selling out or whatever. They've always been the same group of people. And that Tiny Desk concert was amazing. It was awesome. I thought it's what made me listen to the new album. I mean, at first when I listened to it, of course, I was like, this is very different than what I'm used to with these guys. But like,
different isn't bad.
Different isn't bad.
Yeah.
And we need to stop discriminating against our music.
You've given us another great transition. Rue, I know you wanted to talk about another band who had a big Tiny Desk moment this year. Do you want to introduce them?
Do you want to talk about
Yeah, but let's talk about Wet Leg first, unless you want to keep talking about Pulp.
Let's talk about Wet Leg.
Let's talk about Wet Leg.
Because the thing for me was, it's been a long time coming since their last album came out, which was in 2022.
I really thought it would already have been out by now.
Yeah, and the pressure had been mounting because people had sort of been like, you know, when the second album drops, the longer you leave it, the expectation builds. There's no way it's going to live up to that first album and just everything that the first album had achieved for them, which I think was like multiple Grammys and like a bunch of Brits and all that kind of, you know, it broke through the mainstream.
They had... To a smaller extent, they had a very similar year in 2022 that Geese are having right now.
It's true.
Unfortunately, because they're female fronted, they got a lot more vitriol than Geese is getting. But, you know, I think I kind of had expected a Wet Leg follow-up to come probably by like last year.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that they took their time with it because I think they really beat... the sophomore slump risk that we were talking about earlier. I think it's a stronger album than the first album. Mm-hmm. I think it's much better production-wise. I think the songwriting has improved. I think, you know, I know that you and I off air have ranted and raved about just how good of a song Davina McCall is.
Absolutely, that song is.
Do you guys remember when everyone was like calling them industry plants?
Yeah.
And they were like opening for Harry Styles.
Everybody calls everybody an industry plant.
It was so ridiculous.
Geese are an industry plant. Claro is an industry
plant. And it's because...
Your mom's an industry plant.
And it's because their songwriting is just so... silly, I guess, and not in a bad way, but it's just like very fun music. And I think some people hear lines that are maybe not necessarily like rooted in the most insane metaphorical whatever.
Would you like us to assign someone to butter your muffin?
Indeed. And what is wrong with that? And what is wrong with having some fun with your lyricism, which I think they do so incredibly well every time.
I think a lot of people forget, and sometimes myself included, you know, we love music that's by sad white men, but you have to have room to have fun.
Yes.
And you have to have room for people who aren't men to have fun.
Absolutely.
And that's exactly what Wet Leg is. If we can go back to how good Davina McCall is, you and I were like, it's such an earnest, honest song from a band who's usually a lot more coy about their actual feelings.
Well, they're usually a lot more, I feel, cynical almost. Like that first album was definitely a breakup album.
Oh, for sure.
Because we went through the whole like,
this guy sucks.
This guy sucks. We got some great songs out of it.
Supermarket.
We got the rejected white guy reaction of it too. I don't know if you heard like her former partner, who was, I think, at one point briefly in the band, got kicked out very, very quickly.
Of course he was.
Very, very quickly got kicked out of the band because he wasn't very good. But he kind of, once Wet Leg kind of blew up everywhere, he did this one op-ed for some, like, newspaper.
Of being like, course he
being
did.
Like, maybe I should even be getting some songwriting credits on it because this whole album's inspired by me.
You mean the album that they wrote in, like, 3 months after Chaise Long got big? I don't think you do, man. I don't think
exactly.
you do. But if you wanted to give what's her name a songwriting credit for being the muse behind Moisturizer, I think that you could, because clearly figuring out that she's gay just made it a much stronger album.
Yeah. So basically, the concept of the second album is Rhiann Teasdale's come out. Teasdale has written like her lesbian concept love album.
Yeah.
And you know
it bangs.
It bangs. And when the first couple of singles came out, I was starting to wonder if they were stretching the first album's cynicism a bit too thin, right? Because the first album comes out and it's like, it's still a bit of a, we're out here and there's this guy bothering us. Would you like to catch these fists?
Yeah.
CPR was a little bit more of a change in direction, but I think it only kind of retrospectively hit me that this was a change in direction.
Yeah.
Because
Davina,
that happened
man.
When Davina McCall
Davina,
out.
Man. I'm never going to have enough words for how good that song is. Like, it's just, like we said, it's like, it's such a drop in cynicism without losing any of the kind of like clever, playful wordsmithness.
Yeah. And then before the album dropped, they did the Tiny Desk concert. And that's where I think for the first time we heard 1121.
Yeah. And Mulch 2. I love Mulch 2.
Yes. And that was kind of, well, Moshu is still a little bit of a, you know, there's a guy that's bothering us.
It could very much, it could very much be on the first album.
But the music of it is so different once again. And that I feel like, you, as you were saying, they've benefited from taking the time out. Mm-hmm. Because there were a lot of second albums that came out this year. Like there was an album by Sprints that came out. There were a couple of other albums that I was discussing with Astrid yesterday. There was the Last Dinner Party album as well.
That was
good album. I forgot to put that on my list, but that is another second album from a British band that I enjoyed more than their debut.
Yeah, it's a good album.
Shout out the Scythe.
But it's a good album, but I feel like it's less distinctive than the first one. Like it's an album, mm-hmm. but I'm not really picking out like stellar singles from it after the Scythe.
I was going to say, this is the Scythe Erasure. I love that song. I think it's maybe the strongest song that Abigail Morris and Co. have ever written. Also, British Lesbians. Shout out British Lesbians.
Shout out British Lesbians.
Yeah. They put out some good stuff this year. Mm-hmm. And to Wetlegs' credit, but they didn't improve because they are now British Lesbians. They also improved because they took the time
took
off
the time.
And they're now a full band and not just a duo, which I think gave them all a bit more room to breathe and a little less pressure on everybody.
And we saw them live.
We did.
And
it was a fantastic show.
It was an interesting show, just like because of the stage presence and everything being so different from what you would expect them to do. Like we still had the big screams along with them.
Oh yeah.
When you know you still do the screams on Your Mom and all that kind of stuff. But there's now you know Rianne coming on stage, like flexing her muscles, doing the
so buff. So buff. Mm-hmm. I was really shocked.
And they turn up the smoke machine all the way up. The lights are really bright. Mm-hmm. And I think it's kind of taken some of the pressure off of Hester to like, you know, to let Rianne be the front person. And she stepped into it completely.
Yeah. There's no behind the scenes drama there. Like it's clear that they fell into the niches that suit them better. You know, Hester can write as many songs as she wants and Rianne can play them live.
Yeah.
Right? It works for them. It works for them.
And they're just a great indie rock band and they're clearly having so much fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Dead air.
Not dead air. That's the point where I'll probably throw in Davina.
Yeah. I'll be your Shakira. I feel bad for you when you edit that. Yeah, cut that.
Basically, them having that Brit Awards performance turned out to be a really, really good deal.
Yeah.
Because that's where...
Ugh, they're so
like,
good.
Do you know who directed their Brit Awards performance? Love LaRue.
Mm-hmm.
No way.
Yeah.
Who they are now like, super gay with, so...
Yeah, the whole, like, the Morris dancers on stage and everything, it was a really good performance. And then that, it just kind of escalated from there, and this whole album is basically about Love LaRue.
Hey, we're talking about gay British people. Should we talk about friend of the show, Jasmine Forte?
Yes, absolutely. That was also just such a fun show. Like, I really enjoyed that. I really enjoyed the album. And I think we tend to forget a lot of January albums.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm glad that we're bringing this one back.
Until I double-checked, I really would have told you that it was a 2024 album.
Jan 25.
Yeah. Real borderline. And, you know, I'm sure she gets way too much of the credit than she should get. But I got to say... Really nice to hear Phoebe Bridgers on something in the Big 25.
Yes.
We'll be right back.
Thank you.